The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday, the 28th of May, 2021. On the podcast today, Paul Hill, full-time investor and equity analyst, gives his view on the market and stocks to watch, including Avacta, Juvinity, Trellis Health, which IPO'd today, Bellascura, which also IPO'd today, Polarin Imaging, Equals, Aviva, and we also talk about Lloyds. Plus, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most read RNSs too. You can check out both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll also see lots of the content. Traders Cafe with Zach Meir, Bulletin Board Heroes, May 28th. What's in there? Corsair, Crosswood, Frontier IP, GS Technologies. Plenty of companies there he's looking at. There's also an article on Oilex. There's an interview with Alba Minerals' George Franceschidis with Francesca. And there's an article on Bellascura and Trellis Health. Plus, of course, don't forget our COVID-19 index. Biggest rise of the day is Frontier IP Group, up close to 10% to 96 pence. Biggest faller, Dev Clever Holdings, down 6.7% to 24.25. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Paul Hill, equity analyst, full-time investor, and of course, also on video. Don't forget the video. If you like to see Paul's smiley, happy face, I know it just lifts your day. I think when I wake up in the morning, I think, oh, do you know what? I'm speaking to Paul today. He's always a bit smiely. He lifts my day.
You're very smiley yourself there, Justin. But let's pat each other on the back as we go into a long bank holiday. And the weather forecast is fabulous. And also, you're going on holiday, sort of crabbing and mackerel fishing. So I'm very jealous.
Yeah, I think this is the weekend where the economy really picks up a little bit, you know, and people start spending like crazy because, like I said, the weather's there. Every, you know, you're free to do what you pretty much want to do most things anyway. But we're still getting fishing, mackerel fishing, you said. Highly recommend it.
Get your fish and chips in. Get your sort of like your 99 ice cream as well from the ice cream man who comes around in his van. So do everything you need to do on a British holiday. It'd be brilliant. I mean, it could be better. Fantastic weather for it.
But you know what? There's things that are simple things in life sometimes, you know, are worth appreciating. And just a small thing I read this week. I read it before. I think it was a Chinese philosopher said, if you're always looking back at the past, you get depressed. If you always look forward, you're always anxious. Try and experience the now. That's happiness. That's appreciate what you have. And even when you're sitting there, on a coast somewhere, just having ice cream, this is nice.
Living the moment.
Exactly, that's the trouble with stocks too much. Stocks, sometimes we're always hoping for the future, a better future with stocks, and that's how the stock market works. They look forward to sort of future earnings. I've seen a lot of people on Twitter of late. I don't know, maybe they're in resource stocks or something, or what stock they're in, but said this is hard work now. And I've seen a lot of people join the stock market since the big dash for cash crash happened, and it's been quite easy. Like I said, you're going to pick any company in that crash, and you could have done well. You didn't have to, you know, literally, if you'd started on March 25th, 26th, or, you know, or the start of April, investing last year, you've done very well. And now it's maybe we've had that quick, fast, easy money, and now you start picking good companies, I think, now. Now you have to be a stock selector.
Trying to actually time or pick the bottom of a huge crash. Let's be clear about it. It's not frankly that easy.
Who would have said,
let's say 5 p.m. on the on Wednesday, the 23rd of March. Yeah, that's going to be the bottom of the market. I mean, you know, let's be clear about it.
What I'm saying though is people were joined because obviously new people start investing all the time. And I think a lot of the time that's coincided with the, you know, Bitcoin going up as well. People got involved in that. But I mean, I think it's been quite an easy ride, you know, in the markets, I think, you know, since April, pretty much up to the end of the year, and everyone thought lockdown and all that's going to be hard work. Now, I think it starts, you know, you start having to be a bit more selective, you know, because the entire, what I'm saying is that all the tide rose pretty much after that big sell-off, you know, and now you're starting to see Well, some of the nice boats, the tide's gone down a little bit, maybe settling, and you're starting to see the nice boats, you know, and the ugly boats. And you think, oh, hang on, maybe I'm in the wrong boat here. But, you know, I just think now it becomes a little more selective, you know, stock picking, because everything hasn't been sold off now. We're back to a certain level. And so you have to pick those growers or those good businesses churning out cash or whatever, you know. Because there was a certain place. I mean, testing stocks, for example, a lot of people just jumped in those. Did so well. Some people, first time they've ever traded, ever invested, they did so well. And some people jumped in, you know, blockchain-related stocks. And again, they did so well. Now even Bitcoin's having a rollover and they're finding it hard. So those two sectors of market, you know, people are rotating out of those. And so that's very hard. Now you have to look elsewhere for other opportunities, I think. There's always opportunities in the market, isn't there? But you just got to find them, you know?
Yeah, I mean, just on that testing, actually, there's one company that everybody follows, which is Vacta. And I mean, they've got, just to remind everybody, they've got two platforms. They've got their Alpha platform and they've got the Precision Chemo Warhead platform, which helps on sort of like, you know, cancer treatments, et cetera. And the Alpha platform does therapeutics and diagnostics. And it's obviously got a very, very accurate, rapid lateral flow test has been developed. It's basically got the, you know, got the accuracy. I mean, it's almost 100% accurate for identifying people who are infectious. And it's just waiting for its CE mark from the authorities. It submitted its dossier about 3 weeks ago. And the company was hoping to get approval by the end of the month, Ben, in May. And given it's Friday and it's the last day of the month, they've just made a quick announcement just saying, actually, they haven't yet got it. They're still awaiting. The important bit is that they haven't heard from the guys. So, you know, we shouldn't read anything into it. And I think that's how the market and investors are sort of viewing it, because I was looking at the shares just earlier on and they haven't moved. In fact, they're slightly up on the day. So, you know, I always say to investors, you know, don't read anything into that. It will come, I'm sure, because there's no reason, there's no benefit for the authorities to delay a market-leading lateral flow test. So it's just business as usual for those guys. And the beauty about somebody like Avacta is this is just one. And I remember interviewing Alistair Smith a long time. This is just one of their symphonies that the company, i.e. Mozart, is playing, because, you know, there's lots of opportunities, whether it's third-party licensing, whether it's in-house therapeutic development, further diagnostics. So there's like, you know, there's multiple ways of actually, you know, making good money out of that portfolio. Lots of shots on goal. And this is just one. Admittedly, it's one of the biggest and it's one of the first. But it's just, they've just basically just clarified that this morning that, you know, they haven't yet received their CE marking. But I'm sure, I personally believe it's going to come. And I think that's how the market's viewed it, because it hasn't done anything this morning.
Yeah, yeah. And we always, as investors, want things to happen a lot quicker than things actually happen in real life, you know. I mean, it's just, especially when you're dealing with government bodies and departments and all that, there's so many sort of red lines and dots. You know,
when we chat, your patience threshold is somewhat less than mine. And I can imagine if other investors are anything like you, I think you're just, your observation there that we want things moving faster than the world can is a surprise.
The thing is, people want to make money now, they want to get rich tomorrow. That's the thing. I've gone out in companies, and this, do you know what I actually said about this in my investment group this morning? A guy was talking about his company was looking into getting exposure in esports, you know, branding, alignment, all that. And I said, this is the thing that I've made mistakes on. I've gone into sectors that are quite hot, and I can see them being hot for a long time. It's a new mega trend.
Yeah, So
what happens is this, right? Is we get into a super hot mega trend sector. You know, you're ahead of the curve generally as an investor, if you're investing, and you're looking at it and thinking, why isn't it moving? And you can hold for like 6 months and think, oh, what's going on here? Nothing's going on. And then you get bored and you think, and you realize that these industries who are now putting money, say, into esports, it takes them a while to, you know, get the things, wheels turning, to find out how they're going to get into it and all that stuff. But once the money starts going in, it gets bigger every year and more will pile in. And esports at the moment, I genuinely think it'll be mainstream, and we're nowhere near anywhere near saturation point. And the big brands really haven't even started looking at it yet. And so don't jump out early, because I've done that with investments in, clean energy, which has gone berserk after I've got out because I got bored. And I realized
I'll go blockchain.
I realize, I mean, a lot of companies, and sometimes you're ahead of the curve and too far ahead of the curve. You know, it's just timing. The thoughts are right, the research is right. It's just, you've got to have a bit of patience. And do you know what? And like I said, even with any problem, you've got to acknowledge the problem first. And I understand my problem is patience. And so I'm trying to deal with it. Yeah. No, but that's admittedly, I mean, genuinely, you know, you've got to identify yourself, but you're an alcoholic. The biggest problem with alcoholics is admitting to an alcoholic, then they can deal with it, you know. But if I don't admit I've got a patience problem, I can't deal with it. So now I am. And I've held companies now longer than I've ever held companies, because I know I'm still at the start of the curve. And I said, if a GFIN, for example, GFINITY, I said, listen, we're still on the first wave here. This isn't, we haven't anywhere near mainstream. So, you get impatient with, and there's some warrants in there as well. The share price goes up and down and down. Don't get impatient. The company's improving. The margins are getting better. The turnover is getting better. It's growing. You know, the people they're attracting to the company are amazing. The contracts are getting bigger. So just wait. It's going to happen.
Yeah,
just going to have a bit of patience. You know?
I heard an amazing stat, actually. Esports is now bigger than the movie industry and the music sector combined. It's absolutely
you'd be surprised as well, the lag though of investment that goes into it, because it takes a while. It's been the same with gaming, you know, for a long time. People say, how do you get gaming there, how do you get into that, and all that sort of esports, the offshoot gaming, and you realize there's a certain demographic you can attract or appeal to in that area you can't touch anywhere else. Like my kids, for example, if you advertise something on TV, they're not going to see it. You know, I get them. You've got to be advertising on YouTube, on gamers, or all of that. So you've got to, hit that area. And so, absolutely.
Actually, that stat was for gaming. It wasn't for esports. The other thing I would say is, if you are slightly impatient, the best way, in my view, of sort of like, giving you a reality check is trying to do a valuation on the business. And if you have an indication of how much you think it's worth, then you can compare it to where the price is. And if you have a very bullish view of the sector or that particular stock, particularly on a hot stock, then frankly, it may have gone up two or three times, but if you believe it's going to go 10 times, then it's still massively undervalued. And that's a good sense check. If you don't know how much it's worth or got an idea, then you don't know whether it's actually overvalued, undervalued. So all I would say, that's quite a good sort of like, read across to be able to do it. I know it's difficult, but that's the way I would.
Right. And even if a company's risen on that first, like, for example, there's a company called Powerless Energy, and I was in for ages, and I kept saying, it's alchemy, this is amazing. They take waste, they turn into clean gas, pretty much, and they can use that gas, syngas, and they can use that gas power, and it's trucks, whatever they want to do. But literally, they're taking in waste that no one wants, and they're turning into energy. It's phenomenal. And I was in it for years, I did loads of videos on them. Got out, 6 months later, whoosh, to the sky. And oh my God. And it's coming back a bit now, but I mean, it's like, you've got to stay in, a bit of patience.
That's EQ Tech, is it, that one?
No, it's Power Center, PHE, that was.
Right, and, they do modulars. Similar as EQ Tech,
and that sort of area there was, I was holding for a while, I was in it for a while, and I did quite a few videos on them, and literally, I must have been over a year, 2 years I was interested in them for, and then I just got bored. But even if I kept a little bit in, it would have been, a good amount. But there we are.
Yeah. Also, I actually had a very good chat to sort of legendary fund manager Gervais Williams, which I would strongly recommend investors have a look to. I know a lot of people already have. It's had an enormous response on YouTube. But if you have a bit of spare time over the weekend, Small Caps, he covers it brilliantly.
And what I did start watching that. I was disturbed by the building guy. I have to go back to it. But I started watching that. Is there any stocks on there that stood out? You thought, I haven't heard of that before? Small cap is, I'm talking about not bigger ones, but smaller cap.
What I thought was absolutely particularly interesting was he was talking about basically medicine going forward. And he has a similar view as myself, i.e. we're entering this golden age of healthcare, life science, innovation. We've seen it with the likes of Avacta, etc. And he said there was two things he looked for, was best-in-class technology and a massively engaged sort of management team who are really sort of like, really committed to it. And I'll tell you, there was a company who IPO'd this morning and I interviewed them, basically you can see this one as well, CEO Monique Fayyad and co-founder Marla Dubinsky. And this is called Trellis Health, which basically does resilient science-based AI sort of enabled inflammatory bowel disease management systems. And it's just IPO'd, and it IPO'd at 40p.
Oh, yeah, it was today, was it? I think
it IPO'd, yeah, at, yeah. It IPO'd at 40p, raised £28.5 million. It's now trading at 60p. Mm. And the reason is it's fabulous technology. So it hits that one, which Gervais was saying. And if you watch the video, I mean, I hadn't really spoken to the ladies before, but Marla and Moni, both of them, are just so into that company. They're massively, you know, you can just feel coming out the screen, the excitement, the energy, the passion with the actual business. They love it. They absolutely love it. And and when you have people like that, leaders who effectively walk in the talk, it sets the whole culture in the business. And you know, if they've got fabulous technology, which is what they have, it's game-changing stuff in terms of it should be able to help people who have Crohn's, people have colitis. It's sort of treating or managing, it's managing and treating patients who have got sort of like a very long-term chronic diseases, which can't be cured, like say like Crohn's. I've got Crohn's, so I know exactly what they're talking about. So it can reduce the cost of hospitalizations, of emergency care operations, and frankly, it can also introduce the cost, as it did for me, essentially of coming off Humira, which is one of the world's most expensive drugs, large drugs anyway. And you manage it through your own sort of self-efficacy. And you talked about it before. You know, you've got your problem with patients, yeah? You've got to accept it. Well, this is actually the same thing, because if you've got a chronic disease, you've got to accept it. And once you've accepted it, you can then manage it. Well, if you're always trying to battle it, and that's one of their first principles, that they take patients through that whole process. Anyway, I think they've got great technology. It's actually quite interesting, because it's another spin-out from EKF Diagnostics and Mount Sinai as well. So they've both basically invested long-term in it. And what they're going to spend this £28.5 million on is a bit more sort of product development, AI, a bit of software, launching the product or the products and services. And then they should be cash flow break even in sort of 2 years' time. And they'll have massive, and so the 28 million, 28 is more than sufficient to take them through to that. And if you run the numbers, I mean, it's only hypothetical, but if they took sort of like a 1% market share of the US, you know, basically inflammatory bowel disease, they're going to get 100 million of turnover off sort of 30,000 patients. And on that basis, because it's a high margin, recurring revenue model, they should be able to do 30% EBIT margins. And if you look at that and just run those, and that's conservative, because it includes nothing for overseas, because they're going to come to the UK. And it also includes nothing from other chronic diseases, which they can also, you know, be utilized. This is patented technology or patent pending technology. So if you've got 30 million of EBITDA, let's say 5 years' time, and then you put a normal, again, conservative 15 times multiple on it, you get basically $450 million, which if you work through the numbers is £1.90. So I'm not surprised the shares are at 60p this morning, because people realize this is incredible value. And the science behind this is just, it's really difficult to replicate. I don't think anybody can replicate it. And one of the reasons why Mount Sinai was the first place that they discovered Crohn's, the guy actually discovered it in the 1930s. So they've got huge patient data associated with it. So it's a real sort of vertical deep, you know, model. So I would say, I think there's a lot of gas in this one to go further as well. Put it on your watch list and have a look at it. Well worth it. And another one with massive good science, which is IPO'd this morning as well, is Berascura, which does portable oxygen concentrators. And there's it's quite an established, it's an established market. So it's $1.3 billion market, growing at sort of like low double digits. But their sort of USPs is that their product is super lightweight, is modular, so it allows sort of like cheaper lifetime costs associated with it. It's energy efficient and quieter. And if you think about the patients who actually use this as a portable oxygen concentrator, it's typically people who have severe respiratory conditions, smokers, who basically, you know, or the elderly, et cetera. So it might be, you know, people with COPD, pneumonia, or even COVID. And you need these things whilst you sleep generally as well. So they need to be quiet. They need to be lightweight. I mean, these devices, they've done, say they're portable or they're compact. They're only weigh sort of like a you know, equivalent to a bag and a half of sugar. I mean, it's frankly unbelievable. There's a video on it, so have a look. And all I would say is that, you know, you gain, you run the numbers, and I think this technology, they'll do $100 million dollars of turnover, and that's on a 5% market share on a modest market. This is sort of using sort of like one research house, which was pre-COVID, saying that they'd get to that market would go from $1.3 billion to $2 billion, sort of like by 2026. And if that happens, and you take sort of like a 5% market share, they get sort of like $100 million of turnover, put a 25% EBITDA margin, 12 to 14 times EBITDA, works through at £2 a share, and the shares, surprise, surprise, are up, you know, from their listed price this morning at 45p, where they raised $17.5 million, to 53 currently. So, and again, I think that one's got a long, long runway. The technology is fabulous. The management team are really engaged on it. It's worth having a look at it. And I say, I interviewed the two guys again, you know, this morning. So have a look at the video. It's Robert Rourke, or Bob, and then there's Tony Dyer, who's the CFO. But they're making a great team. And the thing is, they haven't got that $17.5 million. They've spent most of the R&D. They've already done it. It's already been sort of FDA cleared. So they don't really need to develop the product anymore. It's just really sort of commercialization. They're not going to go capital-like model, use third-party manufacturers to do it. And so it's really just distributing and bringing the product market. Now, that is the base case, okay? Wait for the upside case, right? The upside case, do you remember looking on the BBC 3 weeks ago when you had pictures of Indian patients in hospitals on the floor, unfortunately motionless, trying to get oxygen? They couldn't breathe, okay? Surprise, surprise, you know, basically they needed portable oxygen concentrators. One, to help them survive and get over the problems, but also more, just as importantly, to be able to give them that oxygen and allow them to return to home to alleviate the bottlenecks and over-resourcing the hospitals. Portable oxygen concentrators, exactly like Bellascura do, yeah, are required in places like India, Brazil, South America, around the world, to help patients who are basically, unfortunately, hospitalized to do this. And an oxygen concentrator is the best way, rather than getting one of these enormous tanks, because it's basically lightweight. It takes oxygen from the air, concentrates it, puts it to 95%, and allows these people to recover. And if you think about what's going to happen this winter, until we get a blockbuster therapeutic, we've talked about it here a lot, yeah? Until we get that, we're still going to get an increase in hospitalizations in the Northern Hemisphere, no doubt about it, despite, regardless of vaccinations, in the autumn and in the winter, we will need oxygen concentrators. Surprise, surprise, the World Health Organization is trying to source 140,000 portable oxygen concentrators as we speak. It's only managed to get 30,000, which means the demand.
Well, point in the direction of Bellascura. So come on, guys, there's a company listed.
I'm just saying yeah. That's the upside. At the moment, they haven't got capacity to be able to produce a large order. But do you remember turning your clock back to March and April last year when people were trying to make ventilators?
Yeah, I remember. All companies are joining
this
in.
This is an area whereby the underlying base case of respiratory conditions, COPD, pneumonia, all blah, 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 supports this stock more than enough. You get a £2 a share from a current 53, 54p a share. If they can deliver literally 10,000 portable oxygen concentrators, I am absolutely sure people like the World Health Organization would snap it up. The problem is getting the parts and manufacturing it, because the people, you know, these are not easy to do. This is really high tech stuff, and I think they're in a great position. And frankly, you know, yes, investors might make a good return, but more importantly, if it helps the world get through the potential third or fourth wave in the Northern Hemisphere this autumn and winter, that's actually more important for the world in terms of health, people's health and the global economy. So all I would say is I led into this with Gervais Williams saying, go for best-in-class best-in-class technology and engaged leaders. Trellis and Bellascura hit the ball out of the park on both of those. and they're cheap. They're cheap stocks. Admittedly, they're still early doors. They haven't got any revenue, but the products, they've passed development. They're into commercialization phase. Hence, you know, that both shares have responded well this morning. So certainly ones both to watch.
Yeah, well, do you know what I like is that people often ask me, do you invest or trade in the US markets? And I think a lot of time when you're a new investor, you know, too many options. You have option paralysis. Where do you go for? What stocks do you look at? Because there's stocks around the world. And I think that, like, that's an example. There's plenty of opportunity within the UK market. Massive. You don't have to look abroad. And you know, in that vein, I mean, I've talked about this before, of course, but there was a study out this week on Plarium. I don't know if you saw that. Oxford University came out. And they looked at a study, a follow-up on people suffering with what they say is long COVID. Now, they did a study on these people, only a small sample size of people, but they scan, and I'll read from here, is Professor Fergus Gleeson. He notes many COVID-19 patients are still experiencing breathlessness several months after being discharged from hospital, despite CT scans and normal MRI not picking them up. With Plarium technology, they've found abnormalities in breathing, in lungs, and all parts of the lung. They picked it up with Plarium's technology. They couldn't pick up on the best of what's available right now to CT MRI. That is phenomenal. And Richard, the CEO, is so conservative. I want him to really be a bit more, you know, promotional, but he won't. But he did say recently, he said, well, I see... pretty much polarizes like this being in all hospitals going forward. And I thought, that's a bit over the top. And I thought, hang on a sec, how can you deal with lung conditions if you can't see them with the current technology? And I thought, that's right. If their technology is the only technology that can do this in the moment, and if they get FDA approval and hatch maximum protection for 5 to 7 years, all he said, in 10 years, polarizers will be in all hospitals. That's phenomenal. And I was talking to him yesterday, and I said, I was just running some numbers on the broker note here, and even on 10% of America and all that stuff, you're like a FTSE 100 company valuation. And if you extrapolate that to the rest of the world, I mean, you're talking one of the biggest companies in the UK. Is that crazy? He said, no, it's not crazy. Sometimes I think about that. And I think we don't never put things like that out there, of course, because that's still in the future. But that's entirely possible because they honestly see this will be the new way of doing things. He said, when you go back to the 70s and they had X-ray and all they had, and then MRI come in, people didn't think there's a need for them, or CT or whatever. And all of a sudden, there's a new way of doing something. And I genuinely think this will be the new way of doing it. If you can't pick up the problems right now with current tech, but there's tech out there that can, this tech will, you know, supersede that tech, you know, or, and it's an addition, actually. So, I mean, you know, all the big GE, Siemens, and all that stuff, and Philips, who produce the MRI scan, it's addition to that. So it adds on to that. So they'll just make these new scanners with this tech embedded. So I genuinely think, again, another company listed in the UK that's phenomenal upside, you know, and could genuinely be a massive company. And yet to stay in the UK. I love that. So Trellis, like the sound of Bellascura. In fact, they're spun out from Tech Capital. I've had Tech Capital on the podcast.
Yeah, they were a big shareholder, probably still are, I guess.
Yeah. So Clifford, who's the chairman of that, I've had him on loads of times for years. He's been on Vox, and they've got lots of opportunities just like that. And they are taking, you know, university IP, and they sort of spin it up and stuff. And I quite like
that. But again, it comes back to sort of what, you know, what Gervais was saying. We have entered an era of medical innovation. And the reason why that is because you've got new technologies like gene editing, sequencing, you've got sort of like, you know, immunotherapeutics, immunodiagnostics, and all these new technologies. It's doing two things. One, it's opening up new areas in life sciences and healthcare, i.e. that we haven't been able to address the problems and conditions ever before. Additionally, things like genomics sequencing, it's speeding up the whole innovation process. So one, it's opening. So the first bit, it opens more doors to be able to solve medical issues, which is like Plarium, okay?
Yeah.
It speeds up the process of opening new doors. Okay, brilliant. Yeah. And one thing we've also realized from the pandemic and regulators have is that they need to pull the finger out and get products that can and make huge differences to people's lives and also to sort of hospitals and healthcare around the world in terms of cost and treatment, like telemedicine. The regulators need to actually approve these and speed up theirs. And that's what happened with the vaccines. That is the three elements, the three legs of why we're entering a medical revolution. More doors, quicker finding these doors to open, and faster regulatory approvals.
But also, I mean, a lot of times, like you said, the vaccines normally takes 10 years. We did it in 10 months. A lot of that, like I say, is regulatory, but also funding, you know? When you're up against it and we're in the middle of a pandemic, it's in a panic. You know, human innovation is phenomenal. And the speed at which there's vaccines, and a lot, like I said, regulation, of course, speeding that up, but also the funding, the amount of money that went into it.
Yeah.
And you realize if you've got the funding, you can do it, you know? And that's the way it is. And so it's amazing. And I think now it's like, you know, the race for space and that, how that spun out lots of tech,
yeah.
You know, when that happened, and it was like Russia against America. This, you know, the race for the vaccines and the race for the cure here is very similar. We've come across, you know, so much new tech now being developed a lot quicker. And I think going forward, even, in fact, today, I think it was Oxford University has set up a council for future pandemics, alerts and monitoring. And I think now we're better placed just out of all these testing companies. The tech has improved so quickly over the last few months that now we hopefully will detect, you know, a potential pandemic before it happens next time. And we won't. And it's worth it because look how much money's been lost to the economies of the world due to shutting down. So, of course, there's incentive there because you don't want to lose that money. So it's an insurance policy, really, isn't it? So
it's healthcare, life sciences and medicine is my number one investing sector by a mile. Yeah. The opportunities are huge. As I say, Polarian, Belascura, Avacta, Trellis. I mean, those are just four we've just talked about today. This huge opportunity out there. And all I'd say is for investors, I haven't got any spare cash, but I want, you know, I want somebody to take over one of my companies. So it gives me a bit of free spare money to put in. But the place I'd put the extra marginal money would be in healthcare. Or technology is another area. But I actually think the biggest opportunity by a mile is in healthcare. And investors should not ignore it. Absolutely not ignore it. Don't be underexposed to healthcare and medicine because it's just got a huge runway ahead.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, and one of the biggest problems we have on this planet, in fact, cutting down the population would solve so many issues. But we haven't. We have a growing population and the elderly growing as well. So we'll always have, you know, that massive population strata.
Yeah, demographics.
Constant healthcare, you know, so it's only going to get bigger. But any other companies worth looking at?
Yeah, no, just pop through. Other ones I've invested in, and I'll keep investors sort of updated. First one is Equals, etc. Now, it hasn't come out with any news. It's got its AGM on the 10th of June. Now, the only reason why I mention this is because one of its biggest competitors, Alpha FX, okay, is actually valued at about 9 times sales compared to Equals, which is about 1.5 times sales or something like that. But Alpha FX came out with a trading update yesterday. And they said their trading was ahead of expectation, was really positive and flying, okay? And if it continues, they will significantly upgrade sort of like their forecast for 2021. If you've got a close competitor, i.e. in e-payments and international payments, that's knocking the ball out the park, I think you haven't got to be Einstein to read across and say, actually, that's UK business to business, e-payments and Forex to suggest that actually when Equals come out with an announcement at their AGM, and I haven't spoken to them, so I really don't know, okay? But I'm a holder. I just take that and just think, crikey, that's fabulous. And I'm expecting them to have a positive start, to replicate that one. So put it in your diary, 10th of June for their AGM. So, you know, investors can get good read acrosses from looking at, you know, how competition are doing because the market is flying. It's like the house builders. If one house builder's doing well, most of them are doing well. And that one's with Equals. So I'm pretty much like it. And the important bit on that one as well is another thing to note. Okay, the shares haven't moved off the back of it because they've got a large shareholder, Crystal Amber, who's been dropping some stock into the market. Now, for long-term investors like me, that doesn't worry me. And the reason is because if the price stays depressed, but the value of the business is increasing, eventually that gap's going to close. It's just a matter of when, not if. So don't lose your patience if somebody's selling shares in it. At some point in time, that stock overhang will clear and the shares will track towards value. The important bit is the valuation, the intrinsic worth of that business is increasing because it's, in my view, unless I'm seeing something, smoking something, that business is doing really, really well. So
That's why sometimes, with small cap stocks, there's always, a big seller is always, there's always going to be people selling. That's a part of the market, you know, and that always affects the share price. Mm. And sometimes that's why I sometimes scale in, because I expect that to happen. Once the share price starts to rise, you always get a bit of a seller, knock the price. And, you know, if you get a bit of liquidity there, that's always going to happen. But that's why sometimes I hold a bit back. And I think, because if you get in sometimes and it has a little bit, you know, a little bit of liquidity and you talk about it, and then all of a sudden the seller comes out, raises ugly head, starts selling, and the share price goes, hang on a sec, what's happening here? That's not supposed to happen. So that's sort of why I sort of, you know, hold back.
You like sort of dodging and weaving, don't you, on the market, where I sort of like just stick my both big feet in and just dive in.
Because, you know, it's one of the things, you know, you get sellers in every company, but the smaller they are and the bigger the holder they are, the more it affects the share price. So it can be frustrating. So, yeah, sometimes you'll do that. And it'd be, like I said, if you've got cash, it's an opportunity. When a big seller happens and you like the company, and often we've talked about this before, I've had people who are new to investing said, is someone selling there? That can't be good. Said, no, hang on. It genuinely, 99.9% of the time, it's specific to the sellers. I didn't do the company, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think with Equals, this Crystal Amber, I mean, I don't know. It's the chap who runs it, I think, is a guy called Richard Bernstein. My suspicion is that he probably just needs the cash to redeploy in other areas or even pay some redemptions for investors. I don't know. But all it means is that the business is going up in value. At some point in time, that price will track upwards. And I don't care. It'll happen at some point. The key thing is the management team is doing a great job. The sector is strong. As the UK economy accelerates and recovers, then these guys are doing well. So it's frankly good. Now, just stepping out of the small cap world and going to sort of big cap. If there's any investor in there wants big cap, I can tell you a couple of them which is worth sticking some money into, because I've done well out of them, and they've still got plenty of gas. First of all, Aviva came out with a trading update. The CEO there, Amanda Blanc, is again knocking the ball out of the park, doing a great job. She sold off a whole bunch of overseas non-core assets, and so they came out and said that they've got basically 6.6 billion pounds of spare capital, which will be coming back to shareholders. And when you run the maths, that's £1.65 of cash coming back to shareholders. The shares are only worth £4.15 at the moment. So if you get £1.60, say, that'll happen in a combination probably of buybacks and also sort of like special dividends. And they probably will also invest in their organic growth as well. So I wouldn't expect everything to come back. But I think there's no reason why that isn't going to head over a £5, because that's where it was before, and it still wouldn't be. It'd still be sort of like at a discount to net book. So, you know, there's plenty of upside. If you want a large cap where it pays a nice dividend, solid, good management team going through restructuring, then you can't really go wrong with Aviva. I mean, I've ridden it up. I bought, you know, sort of like during the summer last year, and I made 50%, but I'm not selling. I think this is going to £5. I'm sticking with it.
With me, though, you're probably, I mean, that I've got to have a business. And I realized this a while back. When I first started off, I just jumped into companies I think I can make money at, you know. But now, increasingly, I want a business. I sort of get a little bit, you know, excited about being a business. No, I want to be a business owner of, you know, and genuinely, if I, you know, thinking I genuinely like to hold some shares in that business, not make, obviously you want to make money, but as the business has to appeal to me, you know. Aviva would never appeal to me for some reason. It's, you know what?
It's doing a good job anyway.
I know it's doing a good job, but I can't get excited about that.
Another one you're probably not going to get excited about, which is a big cap, which I'm absolutely convinced is going to, I mean, I made a prediction of the day, okay, a couple of days ago, that this one, Grainger, which is the UK's biggest private landlord, resident, they've got sort of like, you know, 10,000 or whatever it is, property.
I can get a bit more excited about that, because I quite like property market anyway, and so that's a sort of barometer in a certain way. So that's more tangible to me.
Well, they rent a large portion of their estate out to young professionals, and they've been hit obviously during the pandemic, because most of them left big cities from these build to rent properties, went back to the parents, like my two kids, and have now just started returning. So my view is such that actually their occupancy levels for these properties will increase significantly. The shares are still trading around about net assets. But the reason why I say it's going higher, and I could see it, and I think this is the prediction, I'm almost certain they're going to get bought out in the next 12 months. You've had Blackstone buying, I think it was St. Modwin, which is another big, you know, property developer and renter. just around Birmingham, actually, a couple of billion pounds. And then you also had KKR US One buying Lang Homes, or Lang, John Lang, that is, just last week. Grange is a similar sort of asset, similar sort of price. And the reason is that these big guys, these, you know, infrastructure funds, have got two things. One, access to unbelievably cheap capital. It's sort of like they can finance these purchases of the likes of Sir Modwin and John Lang at sort of less than 2% interest, even though they're a higher firm. I mean, that is just unbelievable. So that's one. And also what you get, which is, again, fueling this whole thing. You know, you've got all the continued quantitative easing going off by the, you know, central banks. Well, they're buying investment grade, you know, this really will bore you. They're buying investment grade bonds, okay, which has kept the prices down on the yields on those bonds, okay? You can't make any money out of investment grade stuff. And obviously, the yield curve is steepening. So where is the sort of smart money going? It's going into quasi bonds that have inflation proof and will pay you a dependable recurring revenue streams. Where's that? Infrastructure, it's residential homes, it's basically built to rent, it's, you know, it's student, even purpose-built student accommodation. Anything that is a quasi bond that is inflation proof, because we've talked about inflation coming back. This is what the smart bond investors are moving into. And that's why the funding for the likes of Blackstone and KPR is so damn cheap, because they've got so many people offering them money to get them assets that are effectively secure bond-like assets. Hey, mm-hmm. You know, buying a cheap UK landlord, the UK's biggest landlord, is one way of doing that. And Grainger fits the bill. So I'd be stunned if they're not bought out in the next 12 months. But we'll wait.
Let me say to someone, you should never invest in a company just in the belief that they're going to get bought out. That's not an investment.
No. But this is a safe steady anyone. They're trading at net assets, so there's no premium in there for an acquisition. This is just solely...
But that's speculation there, isn't it? I mean, pure speculation. You have no idea. But, I mean, you know, of course it could happen. It looks good. But I've heard people, you know, before buying into stocks thinking this is going to get taken over. First of all, you should just buy into a good business. And good businesses get taken over generally. You know, something.
I agree. But, I mean, let's be clear. You know, if you want to diversify your portfolio and have inflation protection, getting into property is actually a pretty good way, okay? So regardless of that, if you want to sort of like, you know, up your protection rather than going into a bond, then Grange is a quasi bond, basically. That's the best place for, one of the best places for it. It'll pay a good dividend yield, good earnings yield. And then you get, if it's a takeover or M&A, you get it in for free, which is.
A good way to beat the time inflation is to invest in a 10 bagger.
There aren't many stocks offering 10 bags. I mean, risk-free either.
No, I know. Talk about patience, actually, in psychology. Go back to that book, The Average, and that book was quite funny as a title, but it's very well studied and, in fact, quite heavy to read. That study of 100 baggers, and these companies are older than 100, and the average time it took a company to 100 bag, 26 years. So talk about patience, you know. But just let me ask you one thing on psychology, right? You say, I mean, you're an equity analyst, and I've probably asked this before, but you see lots of opportunities. And even, in fact, you've named a couple of Trellis, for example, and already I'm quite interested in that. So how do you stop, you know, getting impatient with one stock you're holding that's not going anywhere, but you see another stock with decent potential and upside potential, like I said, you know, proprietary technology in a big market, commercial market, and how do you stop yourself just hitting that, you know, button there on one of those stocks and buying into that?
I mean, the single best way of doing it is you've got an idea of what the thing is worth, what that asset's worth, and where the price is. It gives you an indication if it's fair valued, overvalued, undervalued. And most of my portfolio core holders, I still think they're trading way below sort of intrinsic worth. And that's the best way.
Yeah, but hang on a second. It's a comparison. You hold Lloyds, for example. Do you still hold Lloyds?
Yeah, I think that's going well over 50p. Well, it is almost.
So let's look at that. Let's look at percentage gains here, right? On Lloyds, for example, compared to something like Trellis, all right? Because you were thinking, how much should I get out of Lloyds? And... what's the price at the moment?
It's nearly 50p.
nearly 50 pounds. So what percentage of gains do you think you'll make on that?
Well, I've made about 50% so far, okay?
Well, there we are. That's good, isn't it? How much more do you make?
No, it is, yeah. And I'll probably come out of it once it gets over net tangible assets, which is about 55, 57p. If it gets to that, then I've probably made 60, 70% of my money. But you're right.
So what's that? How much another what? 15%? Is that what you're after? Or what are you after?
No, that would be, if it would be basically around about, if I got out at about, you know, sort of 57p, for instance, which is probably around about net tangible assets by the end of this year, that would be round about, that'd actually be a double, actually. That would be around about 100% gain.
Yeah, but from here now, you're going to get an extra what out of it? Another 15%? Is that right?
Yeah, another 15% from here.
So how much do you think you're going to trellis over the next year or so?
Well, if you'd been in trellis, you'd have got 60p, wouldn't you? Sorry, 60% on day one.
But genuinely, of course, it'll pop today. It may come back, you know.
If it finishes at 60p today, okay, my fair value for trellis is £1.90, which is a three times.
That makes no sense. Then you're holding Lloyds. If you're convinced of that, how much are you convinced of that?
Because
Lloyds is safer, I know. But
it makes perfect sense because you've got to have a balanced sleep at night. I don't sleep anyway, but I mean, a sleep at night.
Exactly. You've got a balanced non-sleep at night portfolio.
You need a selection.
I just realized how to conquer your sleep, your insomnia. You basically need a really unbalanced portfolio, and it'll worry you to sleep. You'll be so exhausted because at the moment you're balanced and you're not sleeping. So maybe you should just get unbalanced. But I understand what you're saying.
I want my portfolio construction is about 50% small cap, micro cap, and about 50% large cap. My biggest weightings are in effectively high gaining sort of healthcare and tech. But I've also got things in banks, insurers, property, that kind of stuff, because essentially it just gives you that level of balance that, I mean, if there was a really problem in one particular sector, one particular stock, I can walk away from it. It'd be painful, but I don't want my family's quality of life to be, you know, sort of like destructive.
Does that mean if you lose a lot of money, it'd be a nightmare to live with?
I don't want to disrupt. They shouldn't have their lives disrupted by my mistakes, okay?
I'm trying to talk to you. Don't talk to me. My portfolio. Yeah.
Exactly. You've got to look at your total sort of like, you know, some level of diversification, risk tolerance.
But you just said to me, healthcare is the place to be.
It is.
Lloyd's Bank is not convinced. Dump Lloyd's Bank at the trellis. Come on.
Not yet, mate. Not yet. But that may well happen. I want to certainly, you know, get further into healthcare. I mean, healthcare is already 20% of my portfolio, which is a big number already. Okay.
Nothing more important than health. I'd not have the 50% of your portfolio if I were you.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. All right. Well, I'll take your advice with a pinch of salt, then, Justin.
That's bad for your health. Don't take too much salt.
I'll just ignore it.
I quite like that. I look at that. I'm not going to go for it now. And the key is, as well, to not jump on everything when everyone else is jumping on it. Because we know the IPO is a day when everyone's shouting about something. And it may have gotten down. It's like same with Ricci, actually. You know, it went up. They cool off. It's still a good, better company it was. I mean, it was higher, a month ago or 2 months ago. And it's a better company now. They've done more deals.
Well, if you'd have bought it after day one of Ricci of the IPO, I think it hit 34p. The shares are currently 70, so you'd have double bagged if you'd have bought them at the top of the IPO.
Anyway, but
I would say to investors, if you are interested in Bellascura and Trellis, have a look at those videos because both management teams are top notch. The technology is excellent, and I think there's a big runway ahead. They're small caps, but effectively all the R&D risk, the product risk and service risk, is largely basically all been taken away. They're basically just about to start selling those products and services to customers. It's mainly now commercialization risk, and the upside is huge. So, you know, have a good look at it.
Will do. Cool. Anything else?
I hope you have a great holiday. Enjoy yourself.
I'll take your tip of going on a mackerel fish.
Yeah, definitely
that, really.
Do that. Tell me how many you catch. Send me a text. Yeah. Put it onto Twitter how many you catch, and then also a picture of when you've barbecued it, because it's wonderful, absolutely wonderful. And the weather's great for you, so you'll have a perfect time. Your lads will love it.
Yeah, we'll do it. That's another good tip from Paul Hill there.
Along with crabbing. Yeah, go mackerel fishing in the morning and crabbing in the evening.
That's why we're going there. We'll be coming home smelling very fishy. But lovely stuff. Thanks for that, Paul.
Yeah, see you in 2 weeks. Cheers, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Quantum Blockchain, down 25% at 1.4. As of course, the crypto market's had a bit of sell-off today. At four, Challenger Energy, up 914%. I think that's share consolidation, to 3.05. At three, Hemogenix Pharmaceuticals, up 7% to 1.875. At two, Trellis Health. It's up, but I can't quite tell. Date has not come through yet. IPO today, we talked about it on the podcast. And at one, Bellascura, also, I assume, rising. First day of dealing at 54.5 pence. I think Trellis floated at 40 pence, then at 62.5. Bellascura, where did they float? Let's have a look there. It's 54 today, and 45 pence up to 54. So they're up as well. So two IPOs most followed today. That's it for the podcast. In fact, apart from, let me just go to the top five. Most read RNSs are as follows. At five, it is Quantum Blockchain Technologies, Cipium Court Hearing Update. At four, Ectech, placing subscription to raise 15 million. Primary bid offer as well. Three, Codal Minerals, Gold Exploration and Mali Update. At two, and at one, Avacta, response to media speculation, or speculation at one. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.